focusing on the experience of making the art and trying to remove any preconceived ideas of expectations of what you're going to make is really important, because at the end of the day, you want to enjoy the process. We have to meet ourselves where we're at, especially when it comes to memory loss. But that can be really tricky. If someone's frustrated, just asking them what they need, and maybe they're not able to tell you, but if they are, that's the first step, is how can I support you?
Welcome to the Dementia Research Project. I'm Matt DeRay, and in this podcast, I explore the history, innovation, and champions in and around the world of dementia. Kayleigh Massey is the founder of Artful Enrichment, a Canada-based membership online platform where senior living communities can enrich their recreational programming and support individual older adults to explore new areas of interest, promoting lifelong learning, social connectivity, and self-expression. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
You're the first person from Canada I've talked to on this podcast. Coming from Southeast Asia, Canada is just so far away. And it's one of the reasons why I love conversations like this. It just makes the world seem a lot smaller than it actually is.
I know Zoom has definitely bridged the gap of the globalness of the world. Like being able to have these conversations, it's nighttime for you. You're living in the future and I'm behind, but yeah.
And so the audience won't be able to see this, but you're sitting in front of some beautiful pieces of artwork. Maybe you can share a bit about your career in the arts from the start right until now.
So I, just in the background, I've got a painting that I did, and then I've got some other paintings from Artful Enrichment, which we'll get into. But my background is in fine art. So I always did art growing up. I was always very drawn to any kind of creative outlet. My parents were, my mom was an art teacher. My dad's a principal and did a lot of theater. They really were big proponents of the arts and really supported us if we wanted to do something creative. It really allowed me to be open to the idea of going to art school. And I went and I studied oil painting on the east coast of Canada in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And I had a really amazing experience there. It's very hands-on, a lot of practical work, just making art on a daily basis. And then I actually moved into the senior living space in a very unusual way. I started working for a company that owned and operated communities in Calgary as a full-time artist. So it was a very unique position. Like to this day, I've never heard of any retirement home or long-term care hiring a full-time artist. So that's how I got into that space. And there I was working with the residents every day. I was working with the recreation teams, the nursing teams, and really understanding how the communities function and how art could fit into those spaces and build a creative culture within those spaces. So that's the background working into the creative aging space.
That's fascinating. So you were the resident artist.
It wasn't really like it was title. I was called a creative facilitator. So essentially it was a lot of retirement homes and long-term care homes. They have built-in programming, right? So they either have contracted facilitators coming in, whether it's running any type of programming, whereas in this case, they had an in-house programming staff running art programs. So it was really great because I was speaking with the residents on a daily basis, building relationships with them and understanding what they wanted to see. And we could experiment with the programming as well and try something, see what works, what doesn't work. We were really free to range the premises as well. So not just working in a studio space, but taking the programs outside or a communal space where we could have family members come in or going out to collaborate with the greater community as well. So it was very, very unique in that sense, for sure.
So I imagine a creative facilitator is not something usual.
It's not really a position. I still to this day, so that was 8 years ago. And I have to this day not heard of any other company having an in-house artist run their creative programming. Which I think a lot of, it's, I don't I think there's been a shift in attitudes towards art programming in these spaces. So maybe it's something we'll see in the future, but I think it's quite rare still.
For people who maybe not quite clear on what art programming entails, could you describe the types of activities you run?
Yeah, so essentially after I worked for that company, I started my company called Artful Enrichment. And we provide creative programming to senior living communities globally. And some of those programs include step-by-step paintings, it could include drawing, but it could also include creative writing and poetry prompts or journal prompts, sketchbook exercises. And it can be anywhere from the fundamentals of art making. So learning how to color mix and use your materials to actually just creating full-fledged artworks. And the idea is with the programs is to inspire creativity in the individual. And some people like to kind of follow along with things step by step. So they like to have that guidance either from a facilitator or from an artist or from a printable guide or a video. And then some people just like to have a little bit of inspiration and then go off on their own tangent and just really make the project their own and follow their creative instincts, I would say. So it can really range in the communities. Some communities will have, like I said, they'll hire outside contract artists come in and run art programs for groups. And then other communities that use art programs, they sign up to platforms and then they have access to different resources that they can implement into the community, either in group settings or provide to the residents to complete independently as well.
Got it. How, in terms of design of the programs, I imagine that your audience would be extremely diverse.
Yes.
So how do you customize these programs?
That's a great question, because I think so many times when people haven't worked in the senior living space, I think sometimes people underestimate older adults. And some programming that I've seen in the past can be patronizing or not supportive to a variety of abilities and experience levels. So something that was really important to me based on the experience that I've had is creating programs that first are accessible to adults and are never underestimate the participant, but then also have modifications for potential age-related barriers. So for example, memory loss, all of our programs have the ability to be condensed for working with memory care groups. If you're working with someone with dementia, often you don't want to provide too many instructions. You want to leave space and room for interpretation and for people to work at their own pace. With our guides, we have the ability to remove some steps so that when someone's facilitating to a memory care group, they're not overwhelming people with too many instructions. And it's also not compromising the quality of the project. So someone can still engage in a project regardless of where their experience level is or where their cognitive ability is. They can still really reap the benefits of that experience and come away with it having learned something or maybe trying something new and exploring their creative side.
How do you think about personal attention when it comes to each and every one of your students?
Yeah. So this is a really popular term in the space is person-centered. So taking a person-centered approach. And this definitely pertains with our programs. We have a suite of training, facilitator training for activity professionals, recreation professionals to, it's not mandatory, it's just there if they want it. And we often try to provide guidance on how to best facilitate to a group in a way that is person-centered, like you said. So for example, we recommend people to, if they're doing a visual arts program, we recommend them to explain the step as they visually demonstrate it And then we recommend them to repeat that step verbally. And then we recommend them to walk around the groups. So you're doing it in a way that's, it's hitting different learning styles. So you're doing the visual representation of the step, then you're verbally giving the instructions, and then going around and working one-to-one on that individual step with each person. So maybe someone needs to see the step up close because they have visual impairments, or maybe someone needs to hear the instruction up close because they have hearing impairments, or maybe someone just needs that reminder. So they need to hear it a second time, and checking in with people as you move through the project to make sure that you don't leave anyone behind, but also letting people know that they can work at their own pace and just giving everyone the kind of space to be able to not feel rushed. And it is tricky sometimes with groups because I speak with people all the time, a lot, most often recreation professionals, and they say that it's really tricky when you have someone who's experienced and really confident and comfortable with the materials or the steps, and then you have someone else in that same group who's never done this before. So they're like, how do I support both people? Because I don't want to hold someone back and I don't want to frustrate someone. So one very small little tip that I like to give recreation professionals is changing the size of materials can be really helpful to level the pacing of things for different people. So if you have someone who's really experienced, really confident, you may want to just give them a larger surface to work on, a larger canvas. And then that way it's going to take them a little bit longer. They can put more thought and time into it. And then whereas if you have someone who's new to the process, then give them a smaller canvas so that they can get through that process, take their time. And it helps to balance things out a little bit. Yeah.
I recall there was this artist who had dementia and he took a series of self-portraits over time. And the difference was pretty stark. I think maybe you would have seen that same one.
Yeah.
I suppose it speaks to a lot of different things, right? But how do you play that role to somebody who's facing memory loss and depending on what that person is drawing, is also struggling with the fact that their abilities are diminished and not what they once were?
Yeah, that could be really, I feel like that's a very complex, because as memory loss for everyone is so different, some people may be losing their physical like capabilities or their fine motor skills or their knowledge and understanding of, or their experience that they once had. Maybe they're an artist, like the example that you're giving, and they get frustrated when what they're creating is not reflective of their prior experience or what they used to create. I think trying to focus on the experience of making art rather than the final product is really important. I think often people put so much pressure on themselves to produce something specific, that something that they have in their mind, they're trying to translate that to something on the canvas or on the paper. But that can be hard for anybody. That can be hard for a very experienced artist. So I think focusing on the experience of making the art and trying to remove any preconceived ideas of expectations of what you're going to make is really important, because at the end of the day, you want to enjoy the process. We have to meet ourselves where we're at, especially when it comes to memory loss. But that can be really tricky. If someone's frustrated, just asking them what they need, and maybe they're not able to tell you, but if they are, that's the first step is, how can I support you? Maybe they want you to demonstrate something for them to copy, to be able to see the kind of the motion of your hand. Maybe they need to see that. But just trying to allow people to be kind to themselves and, yeah, to kind of change their expectations and be open to the changing, their changing style. Like that artist that you mentioned, I think it's a really great visualization of how the brain changes and with memory loss sometimes. I think some of the later portraits that he did are much more captivating when he was later in his, I'm not sure if it was Alzheimer's or not, but I found some of those portraits way more striking than some of his earlier portraits. So I think it's just changing our expectations and leaning into the process and leaning into our current style, no matter cognitively where we're at.
One thing I hear about these type of therapies is that the people that go to them after they leave, they talk about it and they look forward to the next session, right?
I think that again is about the experience. Artful Richmond was a part of a study recently. We're still putting together our final findings. And this study was done, it was funded by the Archeo ERO Foundation, which is an organization out of Ontario here. And it was done in partnership with a college called Sheridan College and their Center for Elder Research. So we did this study where we had individual older adults who live at home use Artful programs independently. So they would log on to an account, access some of our programs, and they were just expected to use a few of the programs over the course of 3 months about. And we were initially really looking at like how we can use art to connect people to combat social isolation, which is prevalent in older adults, especially those living at home. However, one of the things that we really were struck by from the feedback from the participants was the feelings that they were left with after making art. And those feelings really stuck with people. And like you said, it motivated them to come back. I think when people open themselves up to a creative opportunity, there's a lot of vulnerability that happens within that. It can be really intimidating, it can be really scary, especially for people who don't identify as an artist. So when people do these things and put themselves into like moments of discomfort, and they come out the other side of it, it often can instill like feelings of confidence, improve our self-confidence, improve self-efficacy. And I think that was the most striking thing that we saw with participants, is that they realized that they have this maybe uncovered a hidden talent or a hidden passion, and it really sparked something in them. And to me, that was the most kind of powerful thing that came out of that. And we see that in the communities that we work with as well. It's hard to quantify it, but anecdotally, that was the feedback that we got.
Just correct my understanding, Kaylee. I know there's an online component to Artful Enrichment. Is it both physical and online, or is it purely online?
It's purely online. So the way it works right now, currently, we only work with older adult communities. But in September, midway through September, we're going to be launching to individuals living at home. So right now, we have a platform, and communities or companies will sign up for an Artful Enrichment membership. And the membership can be used in a single community. And essentially, with that membership, a recreation team member or programming staff or activity professional, whatever the name may be, can log into their Artful channel, and they have access to hundreds of programs. So right now we have over 400 programs on there in both French and English.
Yeah.
And they can go through our program library and choose a program that they think that their residents would enjoy, and they can facilitate it to their community. So we have a really wide range of programs. It's not just art. So like I said, we've got printable kind of step-by-step activities with photos and instructions. So essentially the facilitator can print off the guide or look at it on a tablet, and they don't need to have an art degree to be able to facilitate the program. And the residents don't need to have experience to engage in it. So it's quite accessible. And what I found that when, as an artist going into a community and working with the residents maybe once a month, you don't really get to know them. So you're not able to deliver that person-centered approach. Whereas by giving the resources to the recreation teams on the ground, they know their residents better than anybody. So they can use our programs, facilitate it to the group, and make adjustments as needed. And yeah, we've got trivia, we've got bingo, and we've got, like I said, creative writing, journal prompts. And then we have a lot of independent activities as well, things that could just be printed out and provided to residents to do individually in their suite or apartment. And we do have video tutorials and live workshops. So there's quite a range because, as you said, every individual is different, and then every community is different too. So some communities prefer to utilize our project guides, which are those step-by-step guides, and have a very intimate art group, whereas other people like to use our art history slideshow presentations or join into one of our like live events. It's quite versatile.
And how do they consume these programs? Is it via tablet or?
I would say it's different with every community. Most of our programs have a printable version, so they could just go on to their computer, log onto their account, print off the program, and then facilitate it to a group that way. So they're not having to look at a screen, and it can be very present in the moment. For our live events, it's a Zoom call, so people just tune in from all over and set it up on the communal screen, and people can watch. Or sometimes they'll have tablets and log individual residents onto our calls that way. It's very adaptable to the community. Some recreation teams don't feel comfortable running the programs as much, so they lean on our live events or our recordings or video tutorials. And then one of our most popular programs is our Herbal Talks, and that is a virtual gallery tour. So it's for people who don't like the messiness of art. And that has been really popular for memory care groups as well as like very independent individuals, because it's designed to spark conversation about art. So people, there's a slideshow or a video, and then there is a document that the activity professional can use to ask questions to the group or provide information about each other's work. And again, they don't need to be an art historian to run the program. That's what we do. We put that all together so they can just grab and go, because they're spread so thin. And yeah, the recreation professionals are often wearing so many hats. So we try to make their programming implementation as smooth and seamless as possible.
Are there any popular programs which are highly ranking that surprise even you?
I would definitely say the Artful Talks are the most used, and our project guides, like the art making side of things. We also have something that a lot of the communities will do, which is really cool to see, is they'll use either our video tutorials, which are step-by-step guided programs to an art project, and they will invite family members to come in. So they do some intergenerational programming, and that has been really cool to see and really inspiring to see how people have modified our programs to really work within their community and build out that creative culture within their community and connect the family members with the residents through a shared art experience. That has been really fascinating to see. Or people have used our programs. We have these collaborative drawing projects, which are almost like a large puzzle piece. And it's one image. It's been divided usually into nine, and then they distribute it to several residents. They complete it with whatever drawing materials or paints, and then they bring it back together to create one large collaborative image. And that has become very popular, because making art in collaboration with others removes that kind of intimidation factor for a lot of people. It makes it more approachable, more social, more fun. And we've seen a lot of communities actually like frame them and hang them up in the community or give them to as a gift. We had a group do a nursing kind of inspired image, and then they framed it and provided it to their nursing team during appreciation week for nurses. So just seeing the way that people can adapt the programs has really been, I think the best part to see, for sure.
You speak about co-creation and the intergenerational co-creation. That's so interesting, right? Are there any feedback you get from residents in terms of their preference? Is it better to create by oneself or in groups?
I think that is just very much down to the individual. Some people much prefer working on their own when they, and I think it goes down to even like where they are, how their space is set up. Yeah. So some people prefer to work individually. Some people prefer to work in groups. And some things that I would recommend too for people who are organizing group programming is create an environment that is conducive to it. So ensure that the space is free from distractions. Like you're not working in a common space that's going to have people walking and rushing around. And I think to get into that creative flow like state, it's important to remove distractions, create a very maybe calming or relaxing space, maybe put some music on in the background or have some food or tea or whatever it may be to make it more social and remove some of that pressure to produce and highlight the social component. So yeah, everyone's different, I think. And it really depends on the project as well. Like some projects lend themselves to collaboration and some don't. For example, I think it can be very inspiring to create alongside others, whether you're working on a project as one or just working beside each other on maybe even something different. I think sharing artworks, I think having opportunities to share the piece with your peers is really helpful, getting either feedback or we found when we did this research project recently, we would do a social once a week and everyone would come and share their artwork that they've been working on that week. And it was a great way to see how differently everyone interprets the projects. People would take inspiration from one person, or maybe they used a material differently or tried something and experimented. And then it's almost like this beautiful ripple effect that happens of inspiring each other. So that's a very long-winded kind of answer to your question, but to each their own, I would say.
Right. You mentioned earlier the partnership with a university. Are there any other partnerships which have pushed you further along in your journey and like just expanded the size and scale of what you're doing?
Yeah, I think partnerships are key to growth in a business, and especially in the senior living industry. It's quite small once you get into it, being able to collaborate with people, whether it's like cross-discipline. So we have partnerships with a company called Stronger You Senior Fitness, and it's great for obviously cross-promotion and reaching like each other's audiences, but it's also really helpful to collaborate on different ideas in how you're reaching your customers or troubleshooting things. We have a great partnership with an organization called the Virtual Brain Health Center, which is in the States, and they have a online resources, I think most of which are free to people to promote like brain wealth and brain wellness and brain health. And we partner with them. They do a brain week every March, and I always jump on their events and do a free workshop for people. And their reach is global. Like they have people tuning in from all over the world. And we're connected with people in the UK called the Arts and Care Homes. So we're doing a collaboration with them. And in the fall, the United Kingdom does an Arts and Care Homes Week. So they like to promote creative aging that way. So we're going to do a collaborative event with them. I think the more people you can connect with and share with and share ideas, so you're not working in silo. It's going to benefit your company, but it's also going to benefit your offerings. It's going to make your offerings more well-rounded.
Is Artful Enrichment, does it have international access? Can people access it internationally?
Yeah, it's completely global. I would say most of the communities that we work with are in Canada and the States and a little sprinkling in the UK and Australia. But technically, because it's on an online platform, it's accessible to anybody who speaks English or French. Because we are a Canadian company, we have everything in both French and English. So potentially maybe there's the ability to translate further into other languages. But yeah, it's accessible globally for sure. It's being online. It's really, it's endless possibilities.
And I suppose now with things like AI and whatnot, that language barrier is becoming a lot less of a barrier.
Yeah, definitely.
To recap, how do you think about creative aging, Haley? If you were to summarize your thoughts around creative aging and what that means to you, how do you think about it?
I think often the word aging is associated with older adults, but in reality, we're all aging. Creative aging really pertains to everyone. And I think it's something that everyone can tap into. The idea is essentially creativity is a way of thinking, right? It's being very open-minded. It's thinking outside the box, trying new things, trying new experiences. So it's quite a broad term, this term creative aging. So I think for me, it is about being open to new opportunities, trying new things as we age, and not putting ourselves in a box and saying, I'm not an artist. I can't do that. I can't try that. Just being open to exploring that side of yourself. And you may like it, you may not. That's okay. But you'll never know if you don't try. And I think when people get older, sometimes we tend to solidify our identity, maybe, or maybe someone else in the past has told us that we're not creative. So we stepped away from that side or just close it off altogether. So just keeping an open mind and trying something and seeing if you like it. And I think that's what it's all about, is just being open-minded.
Totally agree that it's almost like in the spirit of lifelong learning.
Yes, definitely.
What advice would you give caregivers who maybe may not have access to an artful enrichment, but want to do something MacGyver style in their homes, right? What advice would you give someone like that who's got a parent, an aunt?
I would say there's a lot of really great resources, free resources online, things like YouTube or even Pinterest. You can get some great inspiration on there if you wanted to do like a kind of creative activity with your loved one. There are a lot of really great free resources on there. Sometimes you have to wade through things a little bit, but just to get you started, I think there's some great video tutorials on, like I said, YouTube that you could do with your loved one and either beside each other or in as a collaborative kind of endeavor. Also, really, you don't need to have art supplies can obviously be expensive, and you don't need to have like a whole cupboard of art supplies to be able to get started. I would just say grab a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil and just start doodling, start drawing. There's this exercise called the stream of conscious drawing where you don't go into it with any ideas. You just start drawing, and whatever comes to your mind, you just keep adding it to the page. And you, again, no expectations of how it's going to turn out. Just don't think, just do. And that can be a really wonderful kind of gateway into exploring your creativity. And it's more accessible than not, I would say.
Thank you so much for your time, Gail. It has been really fantastic. How can people reach out to you?
So they can follow us on Instagram. It's Artful Enrichment. And Artful's with two L's just to throw people off. Or they can go to the website, artfulenrichment.com. They can also send me an email. It's cmassey@artfulenrichment.com. So I'm always open to connecting with people learning about where they're at and how they can begin to start their creative journey. So always here to support that.
This has been really enlightening. It started off just with the artwork, and I think that really set the tone for the conversation. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Matthew. I really appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for listening. If you want more of these type of stories, interviews, and guests, please follow the Dementia Research Project wherever you get your podcasts. Onwards and upwards.